time quest that we start with our meeting. Just after 10, few minutes, then is the right time to start with our meeting. Let me take this opportunity to welcome all our stakeholders present to this meeting. Finance, Fiscal Commission, the National Treasury, and BALGA. I have checked, we have issued an invite to have this meeting today to the annual committee in the fifth term of Parliament of the Appropriation. We really wanted to start on the right note to have these presentations from our key stakeholders, just orientate ourselves as members of this committee first and foremost, and also to have areas of emphasis from the stakeholders, how we're going to be coordinating and also ensure that truly as a portfolio committee, as a senior committee, we fulfill our mandate as stipulated in the Constitution. And please feel free to take us through the presentation. I know effectively budget process have started here, so it's quite a busy time. You may find that presenters are also double booked present this side in the NCP and also go to the NA, so there's always a rush. So we'll have to be clinical on our time. We believe that we'll give you sufficient time to take through this presentation. Members of the Appropriation Committee are also members of the Finance Committee. And Charles is the chairperson, Charles Livier is the chairperson, the most experienced chair within the family of finance here. So we also, just to make that point, that from time to time, as we interact with stakeholders, we shall be seeing frequently the same faces. And we believe that will help us to increase our, that will deepen our understanding on the finance and related matters that we shall be dealing with. So thanks very much. I'm advised, I do not know whether SALGA has already strategically took the inner psyche so that it is just to present. But I've seen the executive mayor of Mangaung, Ndate Manyoni, Tawa Manyoni, of course, that's a municipality where I pay my services in Mangaung. Also the chairperson of SALGA. The chairperson of SALGA. So I'll give SALGA first to take us through the presentation and request the chairperson, the executive mayor Manyoni, to as well have a counter of introducing his delegation and as well to lead us in the presentation. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thanks very much, Chair. Honorable Ndate Mohai. It's a pleasure for us as SALGA to be meeting the committee again. I'm very much pleased to see Honorable Ndate Mohai. We've been working with him for a very, very long time. Thanks very much that he's still here to give guidance. And I'm definitely sure on issues that we have not touched, we will be able to also inform the committee about some of the work that the SALGA is engaged in. I'm not sure that it's out now. We've been working on matters related to the committees for also for a long time. Thanks very much. Chair, yes. With me here, Chair, I have our deputy, Councillor Nawa, who is the deputy chair of SALGA. I also have Councillor Pile on my left. He is the chair of Municipal Finance, National Working Group. We also have Councillor Mako, who is also our chairperson of National Governance and IGR Working Group. We also have Councillor Monyu. You will see his face most of the time. He is the one that we will be assigning. Honorable Ndate Mohai knows that we very really hard to make sure that Sargon's presence here is always there. And I think having worked with our former national chairperson of the NCOP, we were able to reach that objective. And as I indicated, we also have Babu Matro on matters pertaining to IGR. We also have our officials who are here, Mrs. Lorette, Dave, Mrs. Mono, the other Rebecca. All right. Thanks. Chairperson. Yes, I'm aware that you, should I say, most members are feeling you.
Okay, let me as well ask members quickly just to introduce themselves just before we start. Charles, may you start?
Good morning, honorable members. And if I go this, my name is Charles De Beer. I'm from the Northern Cape, a neighbor to the district.
Morning, members. My name is Sissi Motara and I'm from Gauteng.
Morning, everybody. My name is Farad Issa. I'm from Malala.
Good morning to all. My name is Emmanuel from the home.
Jim van Branders, Western Cape.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Thijs Olesje.
Thanks. Yes, we can proceed. Honorable Mayoni.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, we will do a short presentation. Councillor Honorable Member Mr. Pile will do the presentation. But in general, or in summary form, I can just indicate that SALGA's mandate is in terms of our constitution. The constitution allows that there should be local, organized local government. And in this regard, that is why mainly we are here. What SALGA does, amongst others, Bangaraso, I am to do, we also are an advocacy body, lobby for local government, for municipalities. We also are dealing with matters pertaining to legislation, all the acts that are impacting on local government. And that is from energy to anything to water and so forth, environment in it. And also have programs where we also assist municipalities, mainly municipalities that are in distress and so forth, amongst others. And SALGA is part of the NCOP. We are members of the NCOP, and we will be having Councillor Moon all the time here with you on matters pertaining to local government, on matters pertaining to finance. But in most cases, we will also be coming to do presentations to your committee on issues that we feel strong about and on issues that we feel that really they might have serious impact on municipalities on the government and so on. So I would like to give this opportunity to particularly to start with the presentation. Yes.
Thank you very much, Father. Chairperson, we'll be taking cue from your director to Father. These are the issues we'll be taking through this morning. In terms of covering the range of issues the Chairperson has indicated. Just to confirm then that Father acknowledges the existence from Section 163 of the Constitution. That section provides for the recognition of a national provincial organization that represents the municipality. The text also determines the procedures in terms of in which local government must consult or may consult national and provincial government. It provides for the designation of representation to the NCOP. It provides for SALGA organized local government to participate in the process of the Finance and Fiscal Commission. And it also provides for the Organized Local Government Act 1997, which then recognizes one national organization representing the majority of provincial organizations and those provincial organized local government organizations in turn must be made up of the majority of municipalities in the respective provinces. And then all the different categories of municipalities in the provinces are represented in the organization, and then organized local government must designate not more than 10% to participate in proceedings of the NCOP. As the chair indicated, for some while that hasn't been the case, but as of last year, Sardana has taken up its full representation in the NCOP and then consequently in the Black Community. Sardana, just by way of background, was established in 1996, was recognized by the then Minister of what they represent local government from Chamber in 1997. By way of regulation. It's important to note that SAGA is not a statutory body, but it is official status through the legislation. And Section 3 of the Government Municipal System Act 2000 provides for the purpose of effect of operative government, organized local government, must then seek to the following: 1, to develop a common approach for local government; 2, to enhance cooperation, assistance, and sharing of resources amongst municipalities; find solutions for problems relating to local government or to sector in general, and to facilitate compliance with the principles of cooperative governance rather. Now, that having been said, the SAGA mandate can then be broken up into the following areas. Firstly, that it, part of its work, part of its mandate is to lobby, advocate, and represent the sector, the local government sector. It also enjoys formal recognition and as an employer body. So SAGA is official employer body in the relevant Badr Council for the sector. It engages in capacity building both for municipal officials, but more importantly, specifically for the political leadership within municipalities. It provides support and advice to its member municipalities. And then there's an issue around strategic profiling, to essentially raise the profile image of local government, both within the country, on the continent, as well as globally. And lastly, as part of its mandate, as far as developed a knowledge management and information sharing system, and this enables it to be a hub for intelligence and peer learning within the sector. So that, if you like, the repository of a whole range of research, best practices, in some instances not best practices, because it's important that people learn from the mistake of others, but in fact, in essence, it's a knowledge hub for the sector. So, that being the case, SAGA then determined for itself its vision as follows: to be an association of municipalities that is at the cutting edge of quality and sustainable services, and flowing from that vision, the mission is expressed as follows: to be a consultative, informed, mandated, credible, and accountable to our members, and to provide value for money. Value for money in the sense that SAGA is primarily funded through membership fees that the member municipalities pay in accordance with the membership system through the organization. And all of that requires us to have the following values: funding, responsiveness, innovation, dynamism, and then excellence, both as an organization representing the sector, but also to ensure that the sector represents broadly the same sort of sector. Then to unpack all of that, a bit of a complicated slide, or not complicated, convoluted slide, those things in the slide. But then we get to bring together the SAGA mandate. It locates that mandate within the context of issues which have a bearing and impact on the local government sector. Those include the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals and other global commitments, the National Development Plan and other national strategic plans and policy processes, the amongst others the local government turnaround strategy, and of course importantly the electoral mandate that was obtained in 2011. That is an unpacked in the 5-year strategic plan, which is the current political term of office of the current political leadership between 2012 to 2017. On your left there is an outline of then the strategic goals of SPARC as an organization. I'm not going to go through that. I want to focus rather on the three apex priorities. And in particular, for the purpose of this committee, is the apex priority 2. So part of the work that SPARC would be substantially engaged with that relates to this committee in particular is the review of the local government fiscal and financial management framework. Now, I'm not going to go into the detail. I'm sure we have opportunity to engage in much greater depth on this matter in the commission, rather in the committee. But it is a matter that we have made representations previously before both the committee, the national treasurer, as well as the commission. And the other issue that is related to the review of legislative and policy for the impacting advocacy on local government. One thing that we are going to stress ad nauseum in every forum is the fact that local government has a sphere of government. It's the most regulated, in fact the most over-regulated sphere of government. So as we have people of principle legislation that impact on the local government sphere, there is a whole plethora of special legislation that impacts on local government. If you look at the matrix of the legislative framework that guides and impacts on the work of local government, it's a fairly exhaustive set of instruments that has to comply with perfected to function as it's required. And then the third element relates to improved municipal capacity within the issue. The next set of slides, as we move to conclusion, is really the reflections flowing from the NDC Apex Priority Area Strategic Plan for the 5 years. So the strategic projects that SPARC has engaged with from the current financial 2015. Firstly is the phased implementation of the SPARC Center for Leadership and Governance. This is really sort of effort to professionalize the local government sector and to capacitate the political leadership initiate an executive coaching program for municipal leaders. We'll talk a bit more on this point and deal with the audit outcome. Initiate a multidisciplinary advisory and hands-on support for improved municipal audit. I'm sure members will know that there's ongoing efforts across government to ensure that we have better audit outcomes from municipalities with better opportunity to engage the AGE's office on the recent local government audit outcomes. There is, at least on the face of it, evidence that some of this work is beginning to bear fruit. There is a minimal improvement, but there's still substantial work to ensure that there are much better municipal outcomes across the sector. And the court needs to lead the review of legislation that impedes on local government and organized local government. That includes the Organized Local Government Act, the Municipal Structures Act, the Municipal Systems Act, and the other data management instruments. And then five, the implementation of an anti-corruption program based on resolutions of the Anti-Corruption Summit. SPARC convened the summit last year, it was the third quarter of last year, in response to the perception, real or otherwise, that the local government is plagued by fraud and corruption. And that is part of our work. We want to clean up the image, but where the real issues of corruption that we are able to assist our member municipalities to put in place early warning systems and consequence management instruments for where they are, regardless of an incident of fraud or corruption. And then fifth, to initiate the initiation of a small towns regeneration program to unlock rural economies and manage the urban rural interface interdependencies. This is important work, because there's often the risk that the focus of government's work is in the big urban centers, which account for the part of the economic output of the country. But SPARC has flagged the small town as an important area of work that must complement and complete our overall approach to how we grow our economy and strengthen the municipalities in those local areas. And the seventh, to support municipalities in the implementation of the public works program and the community works program by creating trust in municipalities. And the intention that some of them will convene a local government job creation fund. And then to lead knowledge management within the local government, with the local government focusing on research sharing of local government best practices and knowledge up the municipal barometer. One of the things about municipalities is that there's very little ability to benchmark because the baseline for benchmarking is not consistent throughout. So if you many measure any one indicator within the sector, you'll find that even just among the metros, the baseline for measuring that information is different. So it's very difficult to take comparative analysis of municipalities. So for that purpose, the municipal parameters will extend back certain parameters against which then they can use measurement learning from the views of other municipalities. And then issues around human resource information management system, and then SARS has initiated convene the municipal managers. And then the profiling of SAGA service delivery processes and rebranding of SAGA. This is important because in our interaction with member municipalities, there's often good stories to be told about the success of service delivery, but these get overshadowed by the negative stories, and they feed into the perception that indeed local government is a failure, there's corruption, rampant corruption, and so on. So it's important that we look the experiences, the good experiences within the society so that we're able to turn around the perceptions about the local government, and then of course later that is the rebranding of how that's an organization. I think it's important to announce that SAGA is one of the few institutions of government that received a unqualified audit with no methods of emphasis, or what the AG called the king of it. So we're quite proud as part of the rebranding of SAGA to make that work. And then to initiate a quality management program for local government and for SAGA. The next set of slides, which outlines the work that SAGA has made the presentation before the committee, the appropriations committee of the NCOP, that includes work around the creation of a bulk infrastructure fund to fill the vertical circle gap relating to capital expenditure rehabilitation. As I say, all of these issues is work for which we'll provide to one extent or the other detailed position statements or discussion documents. So it's playing in the year, it's not, I mean, it's really just to make the point another day, the pack of all of them. There's quite substantial work that is going into formulating a SAGA position around the issues, the creation of the bulk infrastructure fund, the new funding model, the proposed new funding model for cities, out of the experience that equitable shape does not represent most appropriate mechanism to address the funding of municipalities of cities, mechanisms to assist municipalities with revenue expenditure that must be developed in cases of underspending instead of funds being returned to the treasury. These mechanisms should continuously monitor municipal expenditure and should identify and capacitate those municipalities to spend. The simple point here is that when there is under expenditure, the natural temptation is to remove the money. So we're not dealing with the root cause of why there's poor expenditure. And so the movement of money addresses the fiscal issue, but it doesn't address the developmental component of ensuring that we capacitate those municipalities. And then the section 139 interventions or 139-148 interventions on the Municipal Finance Management Act should be considered during municipal intervention, and that our position that there needs to be a procedural mandate developed in terms of application of these sections so that there is uniformity in how the section 139 intervention takes place across provinces. And then there's part of the interactions with the Select Committee and Appropriation is the annual engagement around the division of revenue and the medium-term budget policy statement. SAGA participates in the budget forum. We've been doing work around the municipal audit outcomes, We've had extensive work around the equitable share formula, which has been revised last year. And then the committee oversight visits interactions with our member municipalities at the appropriations committee visits. I was part of that. The Free State municipalities in 311, the Northwest municipalities in 311, Northern Cape in 12, and then the Harbour municipalities in 312. And then, of course, the support to local government intervention by far. Then, Chair, there hasn't been a, I'm sure Honourable Adebeya will bear us out on it. There hasn't been a presentation for this committee with a mention of un- or underfunded mandates. I don't see in keeping with that position. The following issues, Chairperson. In our view, as SALDA continues to be a burden to local government respect in the sense that these are national and or provincial functions which through agency agreement or other agreement are undertaken at the local government level. But the funding of those functions remain a problem. So they are either underfunded or not funded, or the functions in particular relate to the housing function, the regional housing function. We know that in the metro there's work around the devolution of level 3 accreditation, which means the funding will flow directly from national to municipalities. But the flip side of that, there remains an issue around the housing function. Healthcare services remains underfunded. Libraries and museums, these are functions executed by local government, but are provincial competencies paid for ambulance services. And then roads, within the society, the provincial roads, national roads, and the burden of servicing those options falls on the society. And then as well that we dream around the various pieces of regulation, that includes the regulation around the standard chartered accounts, the regulations around the appointment conditions of senior employees within local government, the Special Planning and Land Use Management Act. The act was signed off by the President and the Minister signed off regulations and in further provisions of the Act. Issues around the municipal boundary determination and then issues around the Public Administration Management Act now. And then SALDA continues to participate in the review of the fiscal framework as we indicated, and this includes work around the infrastructure grant review of the metropolitan municipalities' own revenue sources, and then issues around cost of basic services. This issue is important, the cost of basic services, because if you look at the equitable share formula, it makes part of the variables in determining the equitable share formula in the basic services component. And our view is that in the calculation, because there's no uniform national norm around the cost of basic services, or at least an aggregated cost of the service, the actual value of in the formula is understated. So the actual, and as a result, and the flow to local government is reduced. Jefferson, thank you very much. That is the presentation.
Thanks, Mr. Play. Okay, the Chairperson, or to make some remarks. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, as you can see from the presentation, this is just a broad overview of SALDA's engagement. I would like to take the opportunity also to indicate to the House members that over and above our constitutional mandate, SALDA is part of the member body of the World Association of Local Governments and Cities. And we also are playing a role in the Africa continent. We also are part of it. For instance, the past 2 years, we assisted in making sure that in the Africa continent, all municipalities and cities do work together, even if or beside the tensions that we normally are faced with in terms of our the former colonized British English and the former French colonies, the Francophone, and so on. So we managed to make sure that issues that are affecting local government and municipalities, they cut across the colour line, they cut across your affiliations and so forth. So those are some of the engagements that we're involved in, including also on letters returning to SADC countries. I must indicate the chairperson of SADC is also the president of local government entities in the SADC countries, where we also are dealing with the general issues that are affecting municipalities and sharing experiences, you know, matters like climate change, matters pertaining to displacement of people, migrations through wars, poverty, and so forth, and also the issue of gender. In the sense that in some countries, obviously, matters of gender are still being put at the back of the national agendas and so forth. So we are engaged in those matters, besides what the Constitution has dedicated us to deal with. And the other thing that I would like to indicate to the House is that the NCOP Local Government Week has assisted quite significantly in the country since it started. And I hope that we will carry on with it, because it allows and gives members a chance to focus solely on municipalities. As you saw from the slide there, there were municipalities that were visited by NCOP doing oversight work. But what we also can do during that week is to have NCOP debating, focusing specifically on issues and matters pertaining to local government. This afternoon we'll have a meeting with the chairperson of NCOP to look into those issues, with the hope that maybe on the second or third term we will then have that week again. It should be an appealing activity in our agenda, not only as this committee, I mean, now broadly referring to the NCOP, because it's there that the members can then be able to really zoom in on matters that you would want the council to focus on as a local government. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thanks so much. But just to get it right, SALGA chairperson is the president of SADC, what do you call it? SADC local government.
Yeah, we call it SALGA, but it's just given after. But yes, it is for all the SADC local government entities. There, what we also are doing, for instance, is to put on the agenda, and try to put on the agenda of our AU, that matters pertaining to local government should also be handled at that level, as much as it's happening with UN committees on habitat and so forth. So we also are looking very hard. South Africa is actually in the forefront in that regard, to make sure that we have local government matters being also handled by AU in general. So, and also, obviously, sharing best practices and assisting in some other countries where there are no structures at all for local government. We remember the issues of Southern Sudan and so on. And the former government, we have to make sure that we assist in those kinds of activities. Thanks.
Thanks very much, members. You have SADC is very powerful, so it lobbies even outside the borders of the of South Africa, in the continent and the world. So, but that's quite important. Our development cannot be in isolation from the rest of the world, and so we really need to make this meaningful contribution, learn from others, also influence. Thanks for the presentation, SADC. And I'll invite members to clarify themselves on some areas that you want SALGA to maybe be elaborate or comment on some of the issues they have raised. Thanks so much. That's a Shah, and then followed by honorable member Ntile. Okay, then in that order we'll take the name. Thanks. And
thank you, Chairperson, and congratulations to SALGA on the King Order. That's an excellent example for the municipalities to follow, and the principles you apply as a construct an organization. I'm very excited as a person about the phased implementation of the SADC Center for Leadership and Governance. I would like the leadership of SADC to inform us when is this kicking in. It's a phased implementation, so what's happening then? Because we go back to our deployments, and we are all deployed in municipalities as we sit as members of parliament. A very crucial point, Chairperson, is the issue of the delivery order for municipality. That was deployed prior to the 7th of May in my constituency. We requested the delivery order, and it was amazing what happened since 2011 until 2014. In a small municipality called Kamishberg in the northern state. People like to forget what happened. And that, I would co-chair that, that be done in each municipality. And even be part of a newsletter, because the service accounts are being sent out on a monthly basis, rather than a telling account. Just put this in between the pages to go with it. We had a formal marriage between SAGA and the NCOP. We must strengthen the marriage. It was called a formal marriage when this event took place in the local government league. And yes, from our side, I can assure the leadership we will strengthen them. And the chairperson, and I mentioned it in the induction, a very serious point is the withholding of MIG funds by the National Treasury. Because of reasons, and SAGA must take note of this. It happened now in the first quarter of this year. The division of revenue is very clear on page 177 in the middle. Regarding the conditions for the releasing of MIG funding, a year prior to implementation, the following must happen: ABC. That the municipal managers and the management in municipalities comply with that prescription. Because now they take a shortcut and they phone the chair of finance and they phone the chairperson of appropriations. Chairperson, you are in trouble. Can you intervene? And then you take them to page 177. But what did you do from your side? This is about the coaching. This is about the training. The training, the planning in a 3-year cycle. Because in the division of revenue after that, each municipality knows what they're going to get for the next 3 years. It's not a secret. It's there in black and white printed. But it seems to me they don't read take it seriously. So I just want to make this point that in your engagement with municipalities, and we will do the same when we do oversight of municipalities to emphasize this point. Because at the end of the day, it's good treasury is here, it's a poor that's suffering because of funds being withheld about administrative processes. Here then the last thing on page 9. I guess it appears here between the letters. Section 139 to 148 of the MSMA should be considered during municipal interventions, and a procedural manual should be developed. You must develop it. Can you be more precise? Is it proper? Is it public administration? We must develop this. That we just use better as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member Michileni.
Thank you, Chair. I have during the presentation of our colleague from SAGA. He indicated that there are improvements on I just want to know if maybe it could be the position to like support the house with the relevant debt as you we came across this in the Spanish Act, so that we can maybe be able to know what is
especially non corrupt officials in economic policy. I just want to know what is assisted housing, because if we check, you know, years gone by, we always have problems, you know, year in and year out with regard to, you know, the, you know, overspending sometimes, because in the policies, you let the law here with the members, maybe run out the budget in the next financial year. But if they were overspending, what, you know, assisted them to, can see they are shown up that they are dealing with the problem. And maybe lastly, I just want to know also what this oversight is to the municipalities that the institutions have like there. What actually did they come across as a common fund? Do they vary at the municipality, or is it all the same go, or maybe is it how things are, because sometimes there are municipalities who themselves get the same things, and sometimes they book the media to say we have not been noted. From the previous budget to today. So we just want to know if we can build a procedure for our clients. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, sir. Mr. Brandis?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to thank Salka for the presentation here. Yeah? It's just a question about the income tax. I see this five bullet points here. Healthcare services and demand services. According to my own information, is that Western Cape is hopefully took that away from the local government. It's a totally a provincial job at this stage. So I can't see this happening in Western Cape. So I would like to know where else is this still in management by local government. And then roads as well. Roads also in Western Cape. We got the problem, we got the instance in Western Cape that the provincial government is funding some of the local government roads on request from the local government, because, you know, they don't have enough money, especially on the they get assistance in that regard. So that we can just maybe clear that up.
Thanks, Brandis. Just a the last, could you please just help us to understand much more clearly? You're raising the issue of equitable share formula that needs to change regarding funding for cities. I assume cities, does it refer to metro, metropolitan, or you cities, all cities? Okay, that my assumption is that you, I felt like very content with the rural municipalities. There was a change of formula with regard to rural municipalities. To a large extent, it seems that you are content that it is helping to address the huge backlog. But the issues of equitable share remain critical for us, and we would like to understand the substance of really when we take these issues forward, facilitate dialogue, we should be understanding how they will improve. Yes, we'll request that you.
First, thank you, Chairperson. My colleagues will attempt to answer on some of the issues that have been raised. Additionally, like for instance, on the issue of equitable share. We did appear in front of the committee and we made recommendations on those matters. What we can do, if the chairperson allows, we can still again come and do a presentation on issues that are outstanding on some of those issues that are of a concern. Yes, for instance, chairperson, on the issues of unfunded money, I think it's more also of the manner in which we work in the country as municipalities. It is very quite difficult when you are faced with a situation to explain and say no, the function goes to province or national. For instance, if there is a need for an ambulance service, on emergency services, on the issues of roads. There are roads that obviously are provincial roads but are within the municipality area. And if the municipality is busy rehabilitating some of its own roads, and the roads that are basically provincial and so are not necessarily rehabilitated, it becomes a problem. Additionally, in cases where you get most of the accidents, ultimately you end up having to do something about those type of issues and so forth. So there are those matters that we specifically have been raised. Here at the presentation is just general, as members are saying, not really asking for certain specific issues, as the member was indicating. What are the problems in some municipalities when we do oversight and so on? And I think the reports on those visits should be updated. Members who have been there before, they basically know that there are those reports that the SEOP is getting on after oversight visits and so on, which are tabling also issues that were raised by communities in those instances, so that the committee can then follow up on matters that have been raised and so forth. So it depends on the areas of members about issues that are being raised, including the issue of audit outcomes. We will be getting now the new audit outcomes. I must indicate, in some instances, there are those areas where, even if there has been an improvement, there is a higher risk of regress, simply because of certain mechanisms that are not in place. But the main issue here is, as much as we are striving to get better audit outcomes, we also need to strive, and the two are not supposed to be contradictory, to get also a citizenry barometer. In other words, the communities are supposed to be as much as happy and have confidence in the municipality, as much as the auditor general also is happy about the performance of the municipality. And the two, we always are stressing that they should work together, because there can be, let's say, much corruption, and we then think that the citizens in the traditional municipality will also have confidence in the municipality. There are also those issues that that might not necessarily be handled by the auditor general, but that are impacting on the manner in which the citizens perceive government, particularly at local government. So, Honorable PDA is indicating we should draw this manual on interventions. In this respect, we are having some inputs, and but obviously it will be proper that it is coordinated at the COCTA level. We are having a meeting with the Minister of COCTA, where we have tabled the issues which we think are critical for the department to handle, in order for us to strengthen local government. That arrangement is still standing, but the minister has indicated that we will be engaging. We will then be dealing with these issues. The issue on the knowledge management of local government. Our issue there is that, and I think also Treasurer Lula, this government has been spending billions of rands over the years as an investment on the human capital. But to say really, these trainings, interventions and so on, they really give value for money something else. And we realize that it's because sometimes we provide training that is not necessarily with any impact at the end of the day. We assume that trainings are necessary, therefore let's put people through training programs. With this institution, we are working closely now with the Department of Higher Education and COCTA to have proper designed courses at leadership level and also at administration level. Our policy, if you get the right leadership at local government level, in other words, if you have strong leadership, I hope I'm getting it properly. have leadership at local government level, administrative reforms will follow. If you don't have leadership, then it becomes a problem. So we want to work closely with the Department of Higher Education. We have been engaging with the Minister there and the Minister of Health to make sure that we then can have this institute that will be an institute that will cut across on matters of leadership and also matters of administration, specifically cut for designer, made for local government. Instead of getting all this plethora of trainings that basically are not having a value for money at the end of the day. So there are those issues that I think Chairperson Mkhwala, we will be engaging with the committee specifically as we move forward. But of course the intention today was for more for this exercise to introduce what this animal called Salga is all about to members. If there's anything that members would like to tell us, the situation.
Okay. Yes, Councillor.
One of the adding from the other chairperson has said in relation to the Honourable Dilemma's session around the issues pertaining to perceived corruption and overspending. I think yourself have organized an anti-corruption summit last year and also dealt with the subject of anti-corruption that we believe it will also go through frequency of the law because of the party parcel of the act. The other issue that the chair also spoke to is in terms of the unfunded mandate. In some provinces, you find that classification of roads in particular, you find that there has been a provincial gazette in relation to classification of roads. And one is all for member municipalities on issues of access roads. You find that they also spend money on roads, which is not their basic function. And it also brings a problem in relation to the auditor car. Even though we've advised our member municipalities in terms of the treasury regulations and treasury sectors that have been issued, that we should stop from doing those, but that also in fact have been put negatively in relation to the political pattern of most of our municipalities. And I think this is an issue that we believe as organized government should be looked at into from this particular level. The section 139 to 148 interventions, you might have seen across the country, there have been different interventions in different member municipalities, which are our members. And we believe that in terms of that intervention, they should be positions laid out. It shouldn't be a willy-willy kind of an attitude where in provinces, people can decide to put a particular municipality under what section 139 without following particular requests of the law. That's why we're pushing on a procedural action. Manual in relation to if a municipality needs to be put under 6139, what are the processes? You know, those processes are there in terms of the NGOP, in terms of provincial government, in terms of the minister. But you will find in some situations the area is really conflicted with many interactions which would not be in the best interest of organized local government. I think those are the things that one wanted to stress on what the chair said. And we believe on the volume of MIG, we also take a blame as organized local government that we'll put hands-on support from the national office to make sure that we also help municipalities. But we don't want the kind of support that we are doing the same support as Costa and also Treasury. So we want to frame it in a manner that they complement one another so that we don't duplicate responsibilities and support to member municipalities. That's why we've also developed a section within SALGA which deals with municipal finance, where a lot of people is speaking on this particular issue. It is our take to make sure that we give that gentle support to member municipalities if they have problems. We already have done that, and in due course, if the report is needed to our representation here, we'll be able to provide that initial report. And where have we improved and where we have addressed and what were the basic issues. That's why the sense of relations and governance has an important aspect to us to make sure that we continue to give that support to member municipalities. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. I would love to acknowledge what Honorable suspect around the service delivery project. We believe that is very, very important, that because a municipality is owned by the people, then the people we elect councillors will sort of employ managers, but the owners of the municipalities are the people. Now, the question of service delivery, the whole of local government is based on Charter 7 of the Constitution, in particular Section 152. Now, we need, to sort of tell the people at the same time that it is not only around, the service delivery, but you always find, that as this question, whereas, there are five obvious things. One is your service delivery based on your ICT and sustainable service delivery based on ICT and budget. Secondly, it becomes your institutional development with all transformation, because we know where they come from. Thirdly, is your local economic development. Fourthly, is the financial viability of municipalities. And sixthly, the same thing here, being good governance based on public administration. Now, if you always get people talking about only one of those services that I said, and for interest, let's say, but we need, to take note of that name, but we need to have, service delivery, sort of, to say, this municipality is doing ABCD within this field. That going out, with the statement and all that. So I think, that's what the person is taking. Thanks, sir.
Mr. Jay, do you have?
Thank you. Just two issues. Just around the website, I'm sure that the committee will occasion an opportunity for the AG's office to present a corporate picture for 12-13 financial year property. What's important to say is the following, that for the previous year, you now have 11 municipalities, as the figure that the president quoted, who have clean audits. These are unqualified without any opinion, and that has increased from 5 to 11. You've also had a significant increase in the number of municipalities that have unqualified with medical services. And then the other important barometer there is that the number of municipalities that actually submit financial statements at the end of the financial period has reached I think it's around 99% mark now. So there are very few municipalities that are not submitting. So it's a quantitative improvement. There's still a lot of work to do on the qualitative element, so more municipalities from unqualified without matters of opinion. But over a period of time, you are beginning to see a stabilization of the disclaimers and so on. So that's the point we're making there. And then on the equitable share, I think it's important to share your correct that the review of the formula now provides a better basis for smaller local and district municipalities to benefit out of the new equitable share formula. The issue is that there's a broader question on the funding of local government. So it's not horizontal division, but the vertical division of revenue amongst the three states. And the view that we're taking is that given the history of where municipalities come, the historical backlogs of infrastructure, and so there used to be, that's why we're raising issues around the public infrastructure grant, issues around the funding of the big cities, the metros in particular. There are about 18 municipalities in the country that account for almost 80% of economic output. So if the key economic infrastructure in the cities are not funded consistently properly, you're going to have a decline in the census today at that level, and as a result, you're going to have an knock-on effect. So the point is not so much around the review of the formula for the equitable share formula. When I made input, I referred to the basic surface component, which needs to be refined so that there's a more accurate reflection of the actual cost of the basic surface component. But that's one narrow element of the equitable share formula. And the point we're making to deal with the comment, because there's a bigger issue, and that issue we must engage with, around the horizontal division of revenue among the spheres of government. So that every sphere, local government is spent upon. Now, we must make the acknowledgement that one, unlike provinces, municipalities have revenue raising capacity, so they can raise their own revenue. Two, there's consistent issues around the inability of local government to spend their allocation. So it's not as if we're making a call to bring more money. These things are not mutually exclusive. So yes, we must strengthen the ability of local government to levy its own revenue, but collect, importantly, collect that revenue. We must look at strengthening the capacity of local government to spend the money efficiently and effectively. But then there's this bigger question that remains. Having done all of this, there will still remain a fiscal gap that local government cannot carry by itself. And that's a gap that we say in the completeness of our developmental system of local government that we need to engage in as part of the review of the fiscal relationship between the two. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. This concludes our discussions on SALGA. And thank you very much, Chairperson Simanyoni and the delegation. We have a keen interest on issues that you raised, and this will also influence our committee when we go to our own strategic plan and outline our program over the next 5 years, and in particular within the current financial year, what activities we shall be engaged on. We take some of the recommendations we've made. We'll also look into the work of the previous committee we build on. We don't discuss some of the things that has been done by the committee. We'll want to master what is called change and continuity. So we'll always be guided as well by that work and in our interactions with yourself. Thanks. Thanks so much for sharing this information with us. Chairman, Chairperson of SALGA and President of SADC and Vice President of the World Local Government Association. So thanks. We'll take you in the order that you arrive in this room. SALGA Treasury, we'll take Treasury now. SALGA, you are welcome to, if you want to listen from National Treasury. We treat this meeting as our meeting. So it's not just presenting and rushing. So you are welcome, some of you, to listen to the presentation. The DDG, will you be comfortable there, or you want to? Well, if you are comfortable where you are there, there is not a problem. The DDG of Intergovernmental Relations, I always use this name, Madije. I've never pronounced the same name. Nale. Okay. Okay. So please, you will introduce the delegation that you are with and lead us the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members and colleagues. We are happy to be here to read the committee on what we do and how we, what we do can support the committee to better oversee and provincial and local government. Let me say that it's mandated to coordinate fiscal and financial relations between the states, so intergovernmental. What we are going to share with you is really in relation to three aspects that relate to the work that we do in fintech to our money. The first aspect will really be around the determination of fiscal framework, the division of revenue, and the work that is done there, and how the committee and interfaces that work, and how we monitor the division of revenue and implementation. So the other part would be around the monitoring of provincial budgets and finances. And the other part would be around the monitoring of local government finance and budgets. I think what's going to come through very rich ground. A lot of tools and instruments that we are putting forth out there that can support the committee in their oversight. Regulations and enforcing and also transparency and effective financial management. So I think we are able to do that. So starting the team, you will have quite a lot of help. We will have cut it short, but we also wanted to give you a taste of the kind of information that you will interface with and the kind of support that can help you to suggest the information so that you can engage with the provinces and the local government in the process of the oversight. So, Wendy Spanon is the senior manager responsible for our intergovernmental policy. So she will take us through the division of the new part of the presentation. And then Edgar is responsible for provincial budget. So she will take us through the provincial budget and finances. Carl is setting for Leanne Hakim, who is the senior manager in the local government budget on this now, and who will take us through the local government budget of finance. So I don't know how much time we have so that we can allow them to take themselves. And I'm not sure whether we run through the three presentations or reports in the team, because each one of them is quite a bit.
Did you receive the program? The program was not circulated. Okay, here's the program when the presenter, so that you follow the program. Thanks. Wendy has a program, so you don't exceed the time allocated. What? Yeah, it's 20 for presentation and 20 for deliberation.
So, yeah. So, all of you just be the maybe you may want
to have that for other couple. We can say 30 for presentation. We want more, we can say more. We then will, members will really flag some of the issues that you want. You'll indicate. You can pass our work to figure through the issues. Thanks.
Thank you very much. The reason why I'm here is just because we're starting with the budget process, it's right at the start when the Division of Revenue will start. And the Division of Revenue will is actually encapsulating the national budget process as it relates to provinces and local governments. But the next two presentations can go down to the provincial and also the local government budget process. That all starts with the national budget process. Only what is quite important is to indicate that the national budget process has also got a certain way that it actually deals with the whole process. It's also been captured in the money bills that stipulates how the processes and the bills in the national budget process gets approved. The fifth one is the fiscal framework. The fiscal framework contains the overall budget that's available for distribution between national, provincial, and local. So that is the first key decision made in the budget process. That was put down under the fourth parliament. So that was approved. Then following that, immediately after that, the Division of Revenue Bill then gets presented. The Division of Revenue Act for 2014 was also considered by the fourth parliament and completely signed off. The appropriation bill is in the third one in the loop, and that is currently, it wasn't finalised by the fourth parliament. It is now being resubmitted for the fifth parliament. So that is how the process is in. So next year, when it's February, we will make a detailed presentation on the Division of Revenue Bill. Maybe this also just then explains how the whole budget process actually fits in and also how the Parliamentary Committee then also considers the budget process. The first time we make a presentation for the next budget we do it during the medium-term budget policy statement that's presented to Parliament. And there's then the first opportunity for Parliament to give proposals on what needs to be considered as part of the next budget process. And particularly important with related things to the Division of Revenue Bill, there's a chapter in the medium-term budget policy statement that specifically deals with provinces and local government. And it would be quite useful for committee then to also have discussions on that chapter because it gives you the snapshot of what is intended in the next budget. What is also quite important in the process, and the FFT will make a presentation, during May, they released a report on what they consider is important for consideration for the next budget. It will be quite important. That, by the way, it has been tabled, and it will also be quite useful for the committee to consider that. And even if they've got specific views, they can raise it during the medium-term budget policy statement as well, because that also feeds into the next budget process. Then you get a very, very big submission in February when the budget is tabled. Part of that is two pieces of documentation that relates to provinces and local government. There's a chapter in the budget review, which is the overall national budget process. There's a chapter on provinces and local government. And there's also a whole division of revenue law. And that's when you then start interacting with the parliamentary committees. And we take them through in detail on what is contained in that division of revenue law as well. The committees then prepare a report, then list all of our recommendations as well. Then how does the process then link up? Because the third one is like an indicator to the national budget process. The allocations are made to provinces and local governments. But it's very important to note that provinces also have their own budget process. And it's a provincial legislature that approves their budget. So there's unconditional transfers that go to provinces, and they then determine how they allocate that. The same applies to local government. They've got the municipal council that approves their budgets as well. The FSC recommendations, this is just giving the legal mandate on what the recommendations deal with. It's largely in terms of Section 214 of the Constitution. The Section 214 of the Constitution deals with the equitable division of resources between the three spheres of government. Very important piece of legislation is also the Money Bill, and this indicates then also what the committees of the preparation need to consider during the medium-term budget policy statement. I've already raised those issues as well. And this is just examples of the previous year's medium-term budget policy statement, and also some advice to the parliamentary committees on what you can engage on. The first is any new policy priorities that's going to require new funding or is going to receive re-earmarked funding, either through the equitable share or conditional grant. It could also be quite useful to discuss any new grants that will be introduced in the new conditional grant or substantial revisions to existing grants as well. And then also any allocations that substantially increase or reduce, and debate that as well. And then lastly, also important, there's also adjustments that's then considered and tabled during the MTBPS, which also then needs to be dealt with. This is just the front cover, and also then specifically refers to 214.1 and 2, because that is the whole legal basis, and also informs the structure of the division of revenue. So this is just for information. But important, this thing indicates how the system works. Not all resources that are collected by national is available for distribution between national, provincial, and local. What first needs to be done is that the top slice is things that government must fund. It hasn't got choices on, and it includes, for example, paying debt. So that's quite important also, because the bigger the debt, the less resources are available for distribution between three spheres of government. Then the equitable share is the funds that provinces and municipalities are entitled to, but of course those funds must also be spent in terms of national priorities and norms and standards. And then the conditional grants, those funds you can only receive if you spend it on the conditions as stipulated, which is quite important. The former discussion on all the were also quite important, because if you do not spend those funds correctly, it needs to be turned to the fiscus. And then what is important is then to determine what are the blockages and to unlock those blockages that's actually resulting in underspending. This then just indicates the division of revenue, and what is quite important is that what this slide indicates is how much goes to national, how much goes to provinces, and how much goes to local government. And you could see that national and provinces get by far the largest share, and local government gets a much smaller share, but municipalities have got a substantial own revenue base,
the provinces, their main source of funding is actually from the national sphere. The reason for that is because they provide large social services such as health and basic education, where local government provides also services where they can get the money back, which they then collect through property rates and use the services for charges. So that is also very important to keep in mind. And this then also just gives another way to explain what they do and where they get their funding from. This thing also just indicates how the provincial transfers are from figures, and it indicates that 80% of their transfers come from the equitable share, so it's large, the largest revenue source, and then they also get conditional grants. This is then the formula, it then indicates it's got six components, then education gets 48%, health gets 27% of the formula, and it's all based on objective criteria with information largely collected from SAS-ESA and also some information from the National Department of Health and the National Department of Basic Education. And the reason for that is you need to have an objective basis to ensure that every province gets its fair share. Often what we get in Parliament is then the debate between provinces, the different types of provinces. You would hear that the more metro provinces would argue that they don't get sufficient money because they've got large inward migration to deal with. And you will get the rural provinces also arguing that they're not getting sufficient money because they've got large backlogs to deal with. So the formula is actually intended to ensure that it actually balances the interest between all provinces. The thing also just provides a bit more information to indicate exactly how much each province gets for each and every component. This then just indicates the conditional grant. This provides a breakdown also that the majority of conditional grants are for their primary functions. Then on local government, the same applies, the majority of transfers, but much lesser than provinces. Goes through the equitable share is because they've got a substantial and revenue rate. Just focus on this slide, it just indicates over time how transfers to local government have increased, and it's a specific acknowledgement of local government's important service delivery mandate. So yes, they do get smaller shares, but the importance in the system has been acknowledged and the allocations, none of the other provinces to provinces or national decrease with these type of percentages. And this then explains equitable share formula. This particularly highlights that funds are going to go to the next slide. The majority funding is provided for free basic services, and that amounts to 3.6 billion. But there's also the institutional component and the community services component. It's on the right hand side. And that's specifically targeted at more rural and smaller municipalities to assist them with the administration. And this also then just provides a breakdown of the conditional grant. And what's quite important, and it's something that we would like to bring to the committee's attention, we are currently reviewing the local government infrastructure grant system. And we would like an opportunity later, like in January, but before the budget is tabled, where we can step you through the reforms of the infrastructure grant system, because it's quite beneficial that we can have a longer session rather than presenting it during the budget. And then the division of revenue bill that just gives a breakdown, but what's important here, the clauses, but then it also indicates the allocation for each and every province and each and every municipality. And then there's explanatory memorandum that then indicates how it's allocated. It will be quite useful for parliamentarians to read through that as well, because it explains how each and every allocation is determined. The next slide just indicates what it contains. This slide just indicates that the first column is then dealing with the actual allocations, so it's out of 3 years of provisional, and it's not firm yet. And then the just indicates what the conditional grant framework consists of. And here's just an example. What could be quite useful is for the committee to focus on the past performance, because that indicates what extent the money has been spent and also what has bought with the money.
and then you don't have to carry all the heavy packs of documentation. It's also obtainable on our website. Thanks.
When you were not rushing, oh, you still continue the presentation. All right. Edgar. Yes, yes. Okay, sorry.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of the Committee, and colleagues from various stakeholders. My presentation is on the provincial budgeting aspects of what we do in intergovernmental relations in the National Treasury. Perhaps a useful starting point would be to point out the slide that Wendy presented earlier on the division of revenue. So the 440 billion this year rises to 508 billion in the outer year that is given to provinces. Is given in terms of conditional grants, which make up about 20% of what gets transferred, and the other 80% is the equitable share. The equitable share is not a budgeting tool. The equitable share is an allocation mechanism used by national government to distribute horizontally the amounts available to the 9 provinces in the country, which means that you will not expect to find that a provincial budget will be divided in the way in which the allocation mechanism is necessarily divided, because it is the responsibility of the government in the province, the legislature, the provincial treasury, to actually formulate the budget. So it's very important that we understand the difference between the two. Also then, what is important is that when we come in, is after Wendy and her team have done their work on the division of revenue, is to then ensure that in the process of doing their budget, provinces ensure that they prioritize the functions that are assigned to them in terms of the constitution, so that we all live in one country rather than 9 countries. And that is essentially my job, as impossible as it sounds. So then, that is the introductory outline. I think I won't go through all of this. Everybody knows the structures established in terms of the constitution, and they have the responsibility to do the things that they need to do in terms of putting together the financial and non-financial plan. Of course, another word for the financial plan is the budget. And what we do is we create various systems to manage that, so that, as I said earlier, we make sure that we live in one country rather than 9 countries in respect to the way that the budget looks. There is a planning, budgeting, reporting cycle that all provinces adhere to, along with national government as well. This is obviously made easier by the fact that both national government and provincial governments are governed by one piece of legislation, which is the Public Finance Management Act. And so what we've done is we've developed a whole cycle, and that cycle is what provinces have to also be part of in order for us to make sure that in terms of the policies that national government has developed find expression in the strategic plans of all of the provincial departments, 124 of them, as well as the annual performance plans, as well as the annual appropriations and MTF budget. And that's essentially what that slide reflects. And in addition to that is the reporting framework that is there to ensure the provinces report monthly on their expenditure, quarterly on expenditure and non-financial performance, both to us and to the presidency, and to ensure that at the end of each year they provide reports in terms of how they have performed, reports which find expression in the annual reports which are audited by the Auditor General every year. The next slide is just an outline of the actual budget process and how it actually runs. In terms of both national and provincial government, we issue guidelines. It's guided by policy priorities and making various trade-offs. It's also very important to understand that formulas don't create money. The fact that there is a formula and the fact that you've changed it merely means that you've moved the extent of, you know, the division of the money that is already there. And so we have to make trade-offs. If you are deciding that you are going to fund A, you are by implication deciding to fund less of B. And so those trade-offs need to be made clear, and we do that as part of the process. And as I said, we coordinate planning, budgeting, policy development, and implementation. And then there's the budget preparation period, which is outlined there. And then, of course, after tabling, there's the role for the various committees in the legislatures and parliaments that they must undertake. There are the various stages of the budget process. In a nutshell, I'm not going to go through each of them. I think people can read. But that's essentially how we focus on those specific areas during those each stage of the process. The various budget documents and provinces that are required for provinces to put together are more or less in line with what national government does, with some requirements in the division of revenue that we introduced in 2011 in terms of Section 29 of that Act. It's still there in the current Act that provinces need to provide. So at each budget tabling, obviously there's a speech, there is the overview of the provincial revenue and expenditure. So what we have at national, the estimate of national expenditure, the EFE, we have an estimate of provincial revenue and expenditure in provinces. Provinces raise about 3% on average of their own revenue. So of the total revenue that provinces have, unlike municipalities where a considerable majority of their revenue comes from themselves, provinces only raise about 3% of their own revenue. 97% comes entirely after fiscal transfers from national. So they have to indicate both how they're going to spend and what they're going to, how they reflect the revenue that they receive both from us and that they raise themselves in motor vehicle licenses, health patient fees and things like this. There must be a provincial appropriation bill like the international. There must be a provincial economic outlook, economic review and outlook, as well as the people's guide to the budget, which again national does. In terms of the division of revenue, we require provinces to also publish allocations to every school in each province, to every hospital, to every public entity, and any transfer that they are wanting to make to the municipality within the jurisdiction of the, that particular province. And then finally, they must provide a list of the infrastructure projects that we're undertaking in the roads, education, and health sector. So what do we do from our side in terms of monitoring these budgets and expenditure? Are there various things, strategic tools that we use? We have what we call a budget benchmarking exercise every year, where we call all 9 provinces in to look at benchmarking their budgets, so that the priorities that government has set nationally find expression in all 9 provinces, not necessarily in equal measure, but in a measure that is sufficient for the service to be delivered in that particular province within the existing resources that they have. We also, as National Treasury, develop a uniform budgeting structure for all the provinces. The provinces are required to adhere to a particular structure of reflecting their budget, which is uniform. We also run a monthly in-year expenditure and performance monitoring system. We've developed a system that we send to all provinces where all of the spending numbers for every department and every program in every department must be captured and submitted to the National Treasury on a monthly basis. On a quarterly basis, this is consolidated and published for the public to see in the National Treasury website in terms of the Section 32 publication. We also publish every couple of years a provincial budget and expenditure review focusing on each of the sectors, education, health, social development, road and transport, so on and so forth, and we're planning to publish one this year as well. We also, through my unit, run a variety of capacity building initiatives for provinces, including training programs on budget formulation and budget analysis, and we also do on-site visits and on-site support together with provincial treasuries, and we run various other forums as well. Whenever there is a Section 100 intervention, the cabinet decides. And what emphasize is cabinet that decides Section 100 interventions. But I get lots of people asking me about Section 100 as though I'm the one that decides not. And the NCOP is the one that endorses whether or not that intervention will happen. So when it does happen, it is our responsibility to do the things that are necessary on the financial management side on the recovery of those particular provinces. We also issue various guidelines to the provinces in respect of cash management on revenue and personnel costs. I'm not going to go through the rest because it's repeating what I've already said in terms of reporting. Except to say, and this really is going to be the last thing I'm going to say, what we do is we've tried to assist Parliament with various tools to be able to, for Parliament and provincial legislatures to be able to exercise oversight over what happens in the provinces. So obviously there's the quarterly reports, the Section 32 reports that we publish every year, and we also provide the same reports to parliamentary committees and the researchers, and those are the components that are there. And obviously part of what we do is we are responsible for deciding on the withholding of any funds to provincial departments in respect of the conditional grants that are allocated to them as a result of either underspending or poor performance or non-compliance with the law. And we reflect areas where there's withholding. So when we report to you, we tell you what we've withheld and where we withheld it from. Also, there's a new requirement now on capital project lists, and this is information the Parliament can also peruse, and you can exercise your oversight using it. The non-financial information, we have a framework for non-financial planning and performance reporting for provinces. The quality of the data in most sectors is still poor, but the system is still in its infancy. But the idea is that there's a certain group of key performance indicators on performance that provinces must report on. For example, provinces need to report on the number of visits done by school inspectors to schools. They need to report on the number of children that have been fed through the school nutrition program, and so on and so forth. We get this data, but the people that are now responsible for it in terms of the framework going forward from 2014-15 will be the presidency. So we'll continue getting the data, but the presidency will be the primary point of contact with the provinces in ensuring that, that gets done. We also provide briefings to Parliament and provincial legislatures as and when required by Parliament on the financial position of provinces, on conditional grants, as well as other division of revenue issues. In the previous Parliament, the norm was quarterly briefings that Parliament wanted us to provide. Obviously, we will, whatever guidance Parliament gives us on the future, we will seek to make ourselves available to assist in whatever way we can. Let me leave it at that by saying, I'm not going to talk through this because it's just a historical issue on the budget reform process. The slide presentation includes a lecture at the back, which has quite a bit of financial information on provinces and how they've performed in the last 5 years, trade information, as well as information on the macroeconomic indicators in terms of the conditions in each province as supplied by SASSA. And you can go through that information at your leisure. So, Chair, with your permission, I will leave it at that and allow the supplementary information to be read by members when they want. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, CCC. And Wendy for the presentation. Now it's time for a break. We need to break for just a few minutes. Can't break. We had this presentation. I'm tempted, if members want to discuss, members, can I have an indication? If you are still want to quickly engage with the issues that have been raised, it is important. The cycle is a very important measure, the budget cycle for us, at what point we make this timeous contribution, the Section 32 reports, quarterly reports, that CC concluded with remains quite critical in our oversight work. And so do you want to raise some of the issues? Salga is ready. So Salga is ready, you want to raise some few questions. Okay. Can I allow Salga? Oh, no, I'm wrong. Okay. There's another presentation by Treasure, I'm out of order. Yeah, let's allow Treasure to present. Now, the gentleman is quiet here, he doesn't even look at me, shall he? He says these things are normal. Thanks.
Good morning, members. going to quickly run you through the local government, municipal budget, and budgeting and financial management and our role in regards to that. So I'm going to try and hit the brief. There's a lot of red flags. I'll skip over them as we go along. It's when you've alluded to in terms of our objectives around local government and really and local government's role around service delivery concerning the constitution. And I've got both the developmental duty but also service delivery duty around their core functions. And I think it very much relates to the discussion and debate around what is core service delivery versus under or underfunded mandate. But I'm not going to go into the specifics around that. And then obviously a legal framework that very much guards in terms of the execution of their duties. From a service delivery perspective, but also understanding the governance, etc. And I'll touch a bit on the legislative framework. I think as much as the Honourable Councillor from Salgan illustrated some of the issues that they're containing, I think we must be very cautious in understanding the regulatory framework in which local government operates. I think my colleague before me has indicated we're trying to get, you know, 9 provinces functioning with 1 country. So when we don't want 9 different countries and such. Similarly, we want 278 different municipalities in terms of their structure, functionality, and ultimately service delivery. So the MFMA being really the Financial Management Act that guides them really provides the basis for how we understand local government and how we understand the financial activity of local government. The Act really aims to not only modernise the financial management practices, but also improve financial governance and clarification of roles and separating responsibility that it relates to the councillors versus municipal officials. But importantly, the last point is understanding the accountability cycle, which I'll touch on in a moment. There are very specific elements of financial management. Now, the key point I want to carry over to the Honourable Minister today is, unlike national and provincial governments, where 97%, as Edgar illustrated, of their funding is raised by the national fiscus, local government has a very complex financial management environment. Depending on the capacity, for argument's sake, a metro is 90% unfunded in terms of raising its own revenues from rates, taxes, public services, etc. But another big thing, distinct difference is national provincial governments on modified cash. So they don't have the tedious understanding of asset management. Local governments are full of rules. And what I normally do is, I ask the question, I'm not going to pose it to the members today, but what is the business of local government? And I can almost guarantee you most of the members today would say property service delivery. My view is, I'm the business of asset management. Because without assets, we can't render services. So it's really understanding this complex environment of how they raise revenue, how they appropriate it, and how they determine what their priorities are. So within this, we've got a division within my EG's units, within IGR for Local Government Budget Analysis, and we've really got a couple of things that we've been championing quite aggressively over the past couple of years. Really championing the local government budget reform agenda through issuance of various regulations. And our finding has been, Honourable Member, as much as there's a perception relating to the over-regulation of local government, what we found is there's a lot of emphasis going around compliance. Now, regulation and compliance is one component. Understanding the objectives of the regulation and improving service delivery is the ultimate end goal where we need to try and get ourselves to. But we're really supporting and doing various things, and I think importantly, understanding, and as the Honourable Councillor of the DLMA mentioned, as to meet funds and the spending of that, and monitoring municipalities' implementation of the Division of Revenue Act and what they're doing with the money. You know, is there accountability, is there transparency? Where the funding is unspent, do they still have money in the bank account? And if not, why not? And asking the questions that are pertinent around that. And then obviously also supporting implementation. So as much as we've got a monitoring and oversight role, we also see our role very much in facilitating capacity and other skill-building initiatives within municipalities. So we've implemented a really sophisticated budgeting system, in-year reporting, grant monitoring. We publish publications routinely, and I'll share with you in a second. But we're working on a couple of initiatives. I will share with members why. We've got certain special project worksheets we're currently busy with, and some of them is the revenue management system for local government, in improving the ability of municipalities to actually generate their own revenue. One of our major findings over the past 2 or 3 years is municipalities are becoming increasingly grant dependent. And the reason for this is they're not executing against their constitutional mandate in generating their own revenue. So they're becoming weak in managing their overall revenue value chain, and as a result, it's easier to, and I apologize, but it's easier to knock on national government's door and say, we need more money, while we're not really understanding how we maximize, in general, the ability to just to raise our own revenue. We're also looking at various other things like the costing and tariff setting, and understanding on trading services, what is the cost of service delivery versus what you should be charging community. And in this, protecting the poor. So if one of my colleagues was here today, he would say, if municipalities are underpricing services, right, it can lead to the poor subsidizing the rich. I'm not going to go into this debate today. But it's really understanding the impacts of his policies in a broader perspective. Very, very quickly, we publish routine information as it relates to municipal performance. So we do quarterly publications. We put together other expense reports to Parliament. Local government budget expenditure review on a biannual basis, and then also reports in terms of the budget to Parliament. This is really the accountability cycle for local government. And similar to NPS presentation, this provides for understanding how local government is driven. So it's really about setting the strategy, appropriating it into a budget, limited resources, unlimited needs. And what we all are ever advocating is that if you manage or if you get your budget set up right in terms of your plan, and you monitor effectively, your success rate will be very high, or higher than if you did it. So it's really understanding, it's all about, you know, the old saying that says, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And it's really understanding the accountability cycle and where we're taking it. At the bottom there, quotes from Solga Haverford and the Honourable Council to the newest shot, or the newest regulation which relaxed the standard charts of accounts. We've undertaken a similar basis of national and provincial. Previously, we're doing a similar type of exercise with local government. How we've impacted on local government for the past 4 or 5 years? Well, our delegation framework is really saying, how do we implement the system by which we start being proactive in supporting municipalities? So, an early warning system. We're monitoring municipalities' financial, but also non-financial performance. National government can proactively start saying where is capacity support required and the deployment, instead of being reactive as it relates to formal intervention. So I'm not going to go through all these details. Very quickly, I think one key aspect I wanted to just highlight to the members today, the national and the provincial budget process is not aligned to the local government. And there's a lot of advocates to say why can't we align it, for two distinct reasons, the one being the local government needs to wait for the national budget process to be able to empower the intervention. Yes, they've rightly got 3-year allocation, but we do know that there can be tweaks to that. And more importantly, it's understanding the alignment between priorities driven from national, provincial, right through to the local government line. I'm not going to go through all these slides. I just want to touch on this one very briefly. I know my 10 minutes are up, Chair. This is at the heart of local government, and this is managing services. And what this is really saying is, if we look at the far left, it's like it starts with the community needs and wants. And that comes down to institutional and constitutional intent, demand for services, the basic services, the right to access to services, versus the non-priority wants, nice to have. Moves on to the local government fiscal framework, which has very much been designed to fund local government. So local government has got a revenue-generating potential, there's various asset supported like the NPRA, Municipal Property Act. But at the same time, the national priority and the fiscal framework around local government is in support of that. And these as a collective, then they really provide local government with that. Then they're going to make their revenue choices in terms of where they position themselves and ultimately how they spend it. At the bottom, you've got the managing of services or the managing of delivery and then actual performance. Now, what you will note is it starts at a high level and it tapers down to a very small level. And this is really as a result of various issues within this framework. And when we look at, and I'm just going to go through one or two, but we mentioned equitable shares to fund local government, yet municipalities also need to understand what their role is in generating our revenue. So we talk about leakages in the process, we talk about theft and fraud, bad management, lack of processes, and that all tapers down from a high base to a very low delivery base. And the question is really, how do we influence this going ahead? collectively with various parties such as ALGA and other organizations, is really understanding how we manage these difficulties. So we've got an early warning system, Chair. I'm not going to go through it. We have attached to the presentation the third quarter results for the 2013 book year. But obviously, at a later date, we're more than willing to actually share more detail with the committee as and when. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Petraud. Thanks. Is there still another one more? Okay. Yeah. One for... You can... One for... Okay. Kind of discussion. All right. Let's have 10 minutes. Some fun break. 10 minutes, really. Let's come back at... Yeah. 5 past 12. Let's come back 5 past 12. Let's just rush and check if there's any refreshment. Water. And then we come back. 10 past we start. All right. Information. But this is nice. No, but you know what? We are not going to be able to. We are not going to be able to. But this thing is important. When we read this, I'm going to ask for instance. I'm going to. We're going to discuss this. We have our opinions. We're going to discuss. But don't lose the things behind you. At what point do we make our contribution? How do we impact on our oversight? For instance, maybe there's a July report that will be out and so on and so on. How do we influence the police to focus on critical areas? Not very thing. I think it is that we should not be able to, but we should go. Don't let that matter to us. Depending on what they say now, how much is that? But if they want to comment, we will allow National Treasury for you. Also, they are nice. The issue I'm sorry. But also, remember something that is not clear to you. Yes. Right now, more like racial and critically empowered. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
And can we proceed with our meeting? We received a broad outline by National Treasury on three areas focusing on division of revenue to provinces and local government, and provincial budgeting and financial management, and the last was on municipal budgeting and financial management. Now, you'll all agree, remember, that these are involved presentations, and the presenter has sketched through them, also maybe because of the pressures of the time when they look in the program. But these, they contain very useful information. So, can we start us? Let me just check where members want to some areas to be clarified, to comment. And also I want to use this opportunity to indicate this committee has got, we are a committee of 9 members. Our full complement as a select committee is 9 members. And 2 are absent. One member we informed that she is quite not well. She's been sick since she's been sick since May. After the inauguration, immediately. Yes, has not been, she's in a very sad state of health. So this is a full, more or less, well represented members of the committee. I thought I must make that point. So that you must not say that maybe 5 is absent or so. 2 members are not here in the committee. And then we are the other house of parliament, the National Council of Provinces. So, thanks, members. Any comment? And it, because it's the first meeting, we didn't even indicate, you know, the parliament is constituted by parties. And present here, members, 2 members here are from the majority party, and the other member there, that did not have been. And Mr. Gandhi from here was in K, from the DA, and Mr. Elaine from the EFF. So don't think that you will have to look for race to see EFF. They are like these members. So thanks. Any comments? Councillor? Yes, Councillor?
Morning. Thank you. And the honourable member as well. Certain, you know, just 2 questions to National Treasury. You know, in the allocation of division of revenue, in fact, they use a formula of saying 40% towards the national, 56% towards the 9 provinces, and 4% to the government. You know, on the basis that, you know, municipalities could or may raise, their own revenue. The question is, does that formula still,
Now, in the second presentation, Mr. Kastav showed one piece of exchange which is quite new, which is the Municipal Fiscal Power and Functions Act. I'm not sure whether that is already an act or it's a regulation, because I'm sure most municipalities do not have that. So that is just on those two. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Councillor. And so members, what they normally say, if you, I can't really, we're happy with the presentation. And it looks like I'm going to, from the chair, request members to go through this presentation, to internalize it. And we are always with national treasure. And we, even in our previous meeting, have indicated that there are specific areas that will want to go in there, in those areas. So the issue of the budget cycle remains one. Division of revenue are critical issues, even issues that you have invited us that you'll be reforming the conditional grants, areas of reform, local government conditional grants, all of those areas. So we'll internalize this document and certainly go back to ensure that we are with National Treasury to deal with these issues. It's an introductory session, it's important for us because it has to set the ball in motion, and we have to increase our capacity as members. No deny the fact that the fifth term of Parliament would also want to make a qualitative contribution in the work as members of Parliament on our oversight. So we want to use the instruments that are available to the maximal benefit of members and also to help in the communities, provinces particularly. Thanks very much. But can respond to the clarity seeking?
The Municipal Fiscal Power and Functions Act is the legislation that deals with municipal owned taxes other than property rates. There's the Municipal Property Rates Act that then deals with other sorts of taxation. Then there's other pieces of legislation that deals with tariffs, which is not a tax. So the Municipal Fiscal Power and Functions Act currently deals with two issues, or two main issues. The one is to regulate municipal taxes that's already in the system, and particularly what we call municipal surcharges. That is tax that you levy on top of the user charges over and above what you pay to actually
for the cost of providing the service. Initially, if you pay more than what it costs to provide a service, you could get the tax. So what Mr. Gavitt is currently doing, or what much less assistance is in large increases in electricity bulk charges, they add to the tariff from electricity, and that's what you then pay. So if that gets too high, we've got the power in terms of that legislation, and you push up norms and standards, but we have not prescribed any norms and standards at this stage. And the second one that's quite important as well, the Minister of Finance, or a municipality on their own, or organized local government, can make an application for a new municipal tax. We've received two applications in the past for local business tax, which at that stage was not approved, given that it wasn't a good, the rate was prevented, was not a good municipal-owned tax, and we can actually give a written input for the committee to want more information in this regard. But also there was a concern that municipalities currently don't optimize their own revenue efficiently. And we are currently working with the Metropolitan Municipality also on a project then to look at how can we actually address some of the challenges in municipal collection. Because it does not make sense if municipalities currently under-collect on their own revenue, then to just introduce a new tax. So there's a whole reform underway that we're actually looking at. But just for the committee's interest, we are currently in the process of reviewing the Municipal Fiscal Power Consumption Act to consider new and innovative ways to extend stability of municipalities, then to actually fast-track infrastructure development. And one of the things that we want to start, and it brings, of course, to the point that Tonga has made, to strengthen development charges that municipalities currently collect. We are currently finalizing the policy, and it will also support legislative changes. Development charges is a funny animal. It's somewhat tariff, it's somewhat the tax. It's neither one of the two. So we need to create very specific legislation to deal with that. But maybe what's important, the piece of legislation, when it's amended, will go to the Finance Committee and not this committee. But it could be useful for us to introduce this committee, given strong relation to the grant system.
Thanks for the remarks, concluding remarks on these issues that the presentation. Let's then have the presentation by FFC and the Chair, Bongani Khumalo, and Chief. You'll help us to introduce your Chief, and you can present this. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, honorable members, also honorable colleagues from Sarga, the Chairperson, and also honorable colleagues from the Treasury, Marie Jeng and your team. Chair, I think maybe let me start off by putting an apology for the absence of the Commission. Especially, I think honorable the PA would know the situation with the Fiscal Commission has not been a very good one over the past 4 years. It's the only full-time chairperson or commissioner that has been around. So it's very difficult to get the rest of the commissioners around. So the one commissioner that would have been here, their terms expired at the end of June. We are supposed to be 9 commissioners, 2 local government nominees, and I think it's important that I actually raise that here, that when we actually nominate people for the commission, it's also sometimes important to actually be able to advise them that the responsibility entails, because in most cases we get nominees and unfortunately we can't control them. Sometimes the attendance to some of these forums becomes quite a complicated exercise to manage. It becomes also more complicated when you have extended periods with vacancies and you're also operating like on the edge, basically, and to get people to attend to some of these particular meetings becomes a very difficult exercise. I have been, however, assured by the Minister of Finance that we should expect that the vacancies would be aspect, and then we'll be able to maybe at some point again come back to you as the Financial and Fiscal Commission, not myself and the management or the members of the Secretariat that I brought with me today. Introduce them. To my right is Mr. Sasha Peters, and on my left I've got the program manager and the national budget analysis. She used to deal with, for some of you that know her, she used to deal with our local government finance issue. Now we have on my left I've got Mr. Mavuso Bobwana, who is our chief financial officer. If there's any questions about where we get the resources to do what we do, he will probably be the person to answer. And then at the back, of course, a new appointee, her name is Anshua. She is the new commission secretary. And then next to her is Henry Exier, who is our parliamentary liaison officer. Now, to go to the presentation, there's quite a number of issues that have been covered in one way or another by the two presentations that have been made, and I'll probably just speak to some of those as a matter of emphasis rather than to restate the positions that have been said. I think quite a lot of stuff similar here that I wanted to talk about. Now, that slide basically talks about what I put together for the discussion here. So the role and function of the Financial and Fiscal Commission, the Commission is a statutory body established in Section 230 of the Constitution. It is independent and subject only to the Constitution and the law, and it must function in terms of an act of Parliament. It's the primary act that enables the Commission's functioning in the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act. But there's a number of pieces of legislation that cover the way the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act, and the way in which we expect its interaction with the various organs of state with which it's not interact should actually happen is guided by a number of pieces of legislation that derive primarily from Chapter 13 of the Constitution. The Commission so there's a list of pieces of legislation that I put in there, and I'm also trying to say there that there's a very central role for the Financial and Fiscal Commission in the intergovernmental fiscal relations system, which basically means that the issues that SALDA deals with and the issues that National Treasury or the Ministry of Finance deals with have a very significant bearing on what the Financial and Fiscal Commission does or must do. And in various pieces of legislation, the Commission is supposed to be consulted when such issues are happening. So the Commission is concerned with the intergovernmental fiscal relations, so legislative provisions, effective decisions that affect either provincial or local government from a financial and or fiscal perspective. I must say that we're not excluding decisions that affect national government, but the assumption is that normally decisions that are made from the top are ones that tend to not have resources flowing from them. So we tend to focus more on the vertical decisions that go downwards and the fiscal externalities that they actually entail, whether positive or negative. So if they are positive fiscal externalities, then we think it's a good thing. But if they are negative, then they must be mitigated. Invariably, sometimes you have to shift functions, for example, from the lower levels or from local governments or from provinces to national. It does entail also some necessity to look at what the financial and fiscal implications are, because of a key principle that runs through the system is that funds must follow functions. And what was raised by SALDA in the context of unfunded mandate is right at the center of that. So those decisions, in more cases, what we have found is that they have not been consulted with the Commission, and so they tend to find their way through the process. And Parliament's responsibility is to actually question whether the Commission was consulted when this was actually done, and then we try to avoid those before we can actually ratify the decisions that have been taken, especially when it's in legislation. Now, therefore, what I'm saying is that there are important stakeholders that must be consulted when decisions are made that have intergovernmental fiscal implications, and we try to list some of the key ones there, and not that they are the only ones, but just the key ones that we tend to deal with. Now, in terms of whether the FFC has a role to play in the policy system, I think there's no direct mandate from the Commission to determine policy. But we have to identify, because in terms of the establishment of the Commission, there's no terms of reference. Nobody can give the Commission terms of reference, and therefore the Commission has to decide with its own understanding of scale of the environment to look at what sort of issues it must address. And in order to do that, these types of engagements with our key stakeholders basically provide us with that, so we can look at what weaknesses exist in the system. We then have to look at how we develop our proposals, and we've chosen that our proposals have to be based on research that is evidence led. So we can't just work on hearsay types of issues. We need to find the evidence. And therefore, the Commission, if you look at the early work of the Commission, it has always been about data on this and data on that and data on that. So when we have to address issues, because sometimes we have to address issues that organs of state approach the Commission for a view or for advice. And we would require the information that is necessary for us to actually apply our mind and make recommendations. So without evidence, it's very difficult to make any useful recommendations. So we interact and participate in forums and institutions that drive the system. We also share our information with the different legislatures. Somebody excluded the local government, organized local government on an annual basis. We have to have a discussion with the SAUDA at least once. But at a technical level, I think there's ongoing interaction. So that's how we actually influence some of these processes that relates to policy formulation. And for spirit of recommendations, quite a lot of people ask this question, and we always say the responsibility for the enforcement of recommendations basically lies with Parliament, because the primary recipient of the Commission's recommendation has to be Parliament, and Parliament has to engage with the executive to deal with how the recommendations, in particular when we deal with the annual recommendations that are made in terms of Section 2.1.4 of the Constitution. Those basically relate to the division of revenue. And we have added to that recommendations that relate to the Money Bills Amendment Procedure Related Matters Act. Also have to be interrogated by Parliament. And now, in terms of who then monitors whether they are adhered to or not, the Constitution does require that the Minister must respond to the Commission's recommendations, must consult at least 2 weeks, I think it is, before he actually tables the Division of Revenue Bill, which is basically part of the budget. He has to consult with the Commission, and he then has to respond in terms of the Division of Revenue Bill and attach that for Parliament's consideration. So there's a very clear process of dealing with the Financial and Fiscal Commission's recommendation that Parliament basically must serve as responsible. Now, I think here what we can say here is that the FFC's primary output in terms of Section 2.1 of the Constitution, the annual submission of the Division of Revenue that submitted 10 months, and I think Wendy has already spoken about it, we submitted at the end of May, that's in terms of the law. We will be expecting, I did have an engagement with the chairperson here and chairperson there about how we are then going to treat those recommendations, because we need to deal with them. They are for the 2015 Division of Revenue. And so we'll have to find a way on how we are going to deal with that. And then first with that, we will obviously make a submission after the LGBTS and then the Division of Revenue Bill, the fiscal framework, those are related for 2015. But for 2014, the only thing that we're dealing with now is the submission on the appropriation bill. we have placed the standing committee on that last week, on the standing committee on appropriations last week, and I am sure that we will be continuing with this particular committee at some point if it's required to do. Now, yeah, so I've spoken about this as well. Now, in terms of the support that the commission can provide, I mean, we provide support where we are required. So if because in terms of the FST Act, any organ of state can request commission's support or intervention in any particular matter, as long as it's a financial and fiscal matter, and is within the commission's mandate, we will be able to do that. We have done a few things in the past at the request of either the committee or at the request of members. We have also done certain things for ourselves, driven primarily by ourselves, where we saw that there was a need to actually provide the kind of support. So there are all of these things that we can actually provide. I don't think I need to go into that detail with those. Now, a new approach that we introduced in 2011 is an approach that now tries to bring us together, because there's a lot of unresolved issues. And I think I would locate the issue around the equitable share in this process, whether it's local government equitable share or is a provincial government equitable share. We need to actually locate it in this kind of a context, because there's quite a lot of work that has been done around this thing by a lot of people, to such an extent that I am very much of the view that there is nothing new that will come out of it. But let's actually get together and look at what we have and see whether we can actually get a meeting of minds in terms of where we need to panel with the things. Because a lot of the challenges that we have now are not simply a result of what kind of a formula we have, but they are a result of the changes that have happened in government delivery model. At some point when we designed this formula, we had a different approach to delivery of government services. And that alone does present some certain shocks in terms of how the system has responded. Secondly, there's been a lot of functional movements or functional shifts from one sphere to the other, or from the other sphere to another. So all of those changes basically require that we actually take a step back and relook at how we design the system. And so I would very much, in the same spirit as Salga, say to the committee that it might be important that the NCOP might actually drive that kind of a process where we can open up and get submissions from a whole range of people, and we can see how at a technical level we can come back to something that we can say, no, look, we can actually live with that. So if there's new work that needs to be done, it will be on the basis of an appropriate assessment of what we have. And I must say that with the local government equitable share formula, what comes out is that definitely we can't apply the same thing that we apply to the cities as to what we apply to local, to rural municipalities. And that is where SALGA's issue is now coming from. Not to say that there's nothing wrong with the rural formula. It was reviewed in exactly a similar approach as I'm suggesting. And we did pick up on quite a number of these issues that they raised. But there are still problem statements. They need to be interrogated and objectively assessed, and then we should be able to see how we actually move forward with that. So on that particular aspect, I was requested to say a little bit about the local government fiscal framework that we did, and Sasha here will actually talk about that now. Let me ask you to talk about that now, and then I will come back to we'll talk about two things and then I'll come back to you.
Good morning to you, members of the committee and other colleagues. As my chairperson mentioned, I'll just take you through some of the key issues that came out of our public hearings on the local government fiscal framework. And they relate to important issues such as incorporating the aspect of differentiation, our concerns around the numerous conditional grants that exist in the system. And if you'll allow, I'll just give a bit of detail on some of these issues. So with respect to differentiation, we know that we're dealing with 278 municipalities. One side you've got your urban municipalities, and at the other end of the spectrum your rural municipalities with low economic activity, unemployment, etc. So the differences that relate to these municipalities can be based on exogenous factors, factors that are not in their control, things like the climate that they experience with topography. And generally, your intergovernmental fiscal transfers can compensate municipalities for that. So your LAS allocation, for example, will give more resources to your poorer, more rural municipalities. Then there are another set of differences that relate to factors that are within the municipality's control, things that relate to poor performance, inadequate revenue raising, revenue collection, etc. And our view is that the system is still weak at rewarding good performance and sanctioning poor performance. So with respect to differentiation, we need those kinds of aspects to come out more strongly. Jay, if I can focus then on our concerns with respect to the conditional grant. The Commission's view is basically that we have between 2004 and the current financial year, we've seen exceptionally rapid growth in the number of conditional grants that local government and municipalities have to contend with. Each of these grants has different reporting requirements, etc., and affects, as you know, a big administrative burden on municipalities. In 2004, we did see a consolidation of these grants following an FSC recommendation. But if we look at from 2007 onwards, we see that we're reverting back to the system of unconsolidated grants. In the current financial year, we have in excess of 20 local government conditional grants. National Treasury did mention that they're reviewing the system of conditional grants, particularly in the local infrastructure grants. So we are hopeful that this issue can be as part of that circle. If I can just hand back to my chairperson.
I don't think that I want to go through the submission that we made on the 2014 Division of Revenue. If members would like to do that, we can actually do that at some point when we have time, because it's actually quite an involved discussion that we have to go through that. So I'll take it that the members have the report. I did check with my parliamentary liaison officer and he confirmed that the report is there. Now, the next thing that I want to just share with you quickly is in terms of the work that we are doing now that's trying to bring back situate ourselves within the National Development Plan. The theme that we have is like how does the IGFR system support the National Development Plan, so that our 2014-19 kind of an approach to our recommendations program. So we're looking at the dynamics of the economy and social issues, and that's balancing the economy and the pillars that support the economy. And then we're also looking at the challenge of the social services that we actually have there. We also try here to look at the balance between accumulation and breakthrough. To what extent can we actually rely on what we know? Do we need innovation? And if there's innovation that we need, in which areas must we actually be focusing? And then there are issues relating to the capital base.
I think these issues that relate to the capital state go way beyond the issues that relate to the division or allocation of resources. They are in what we have referred to in some of our documents as second generation type of issues. When you have satisfied yourself that we have a fairly decent allocation mechanism for resources, and we are actually aligning resources to where they are required, we must then say how effective or how efficiently are those resources being utilized. And that is a very difficult terrain for a commission like the National Digital Commission to actually maneuver on its own, because it involves like looking at administrative practices at some point. What actually happened at the point of delivery, and that is not the role of the National Digital Commission. But that information is required if we have gone beyond the issues of allocations and we want to look at the effectiveness or the impact of the resources that we are actually transferring. And that's a very complicated exercise. So what you will see is that in terms of the approach that we are taking, we are taking a very collaborative approach, working very closely with stakeholders like SALGA, National Treasury. We have even with some of the research institutions that we have in South Africa, like the CSIR, even Sciences Research Council, municipal demarcation. Both the issues that were raised here that relate to boundary determination and boundary determination, what actually happens. So there are issues, the other issues that are very complicated that we're trying to bring into this and try to align the work of the Commission with supporting the national development plan ultimately. Now, this, I don't want to go into the detail, but this is what it basically constitutes the project and project that the Commission will actually be looking at over the next 5 years. This can be read. Now, in terms of what we think is the value that we add, is that we can provide a pricing analysis, and we also can provide training to assist the work of the committee. We can provide very specialized training for committee members and financial researchers. We've done that in the past. We can do it again if the committee wants us to come and do that. Our recommendations, we want to ensure that they are founded on evidence-based research. And we also can provide technical support with respect to fiscal oversight activities. So if you're going to do your oversight, you can actually request us to provide you technical support on what we think is actually happening wherever you're going. We'll be able to do that for you. So just to conclude, Chair, we basically have a story about institution building as a long-term process. We know that Parliament actually changes every 5 years. One would actually wish that the institutional memory does not get lost as you change the members or the composition of the members, but the institutional memory must actually convey. And hopefully that attempt has been made. I see that there's quite a number of people that stayed in Parliament compared to the past. But now maybe in the committees themselves, that might be a different type of a situation that obtains. But hopefully going forward, these are issues that will be taken on board. FFC, the Governmental Official Relations Conference, will be hosted in Cape Town from the 11th to the 13th of August. And the theme is an African perspective on decentralization lessons for South Africa. That's what is missing there. And I think, Honorable Chair of SALGA, you would be also invited. The invitation is coming. This committee is invited also through the chairperson and also through the NGOP. Yeah. There's a few other people that are invited that will get their letters in the post. And Jefferson, let me thank you.
Thanks very much, Mr. Khumalo. members, we had the presentation. Any comment? Yes, Honorable Shah.
Chairperson, I just want to say that we as employees of our governance to this committee enhance the interaction between the FFC and our respective provincial legislatures. It was done in the past, but I speak for myself in the Northern Cape. Because it's very important that the EXCO also be part of that engagement. In order to get the EXCO with Guru Mask for the FFC was sitting in Kimberley and the provincial legislature speaking to the MDLs. But it's not their problem, it's the problem of planning in the legislature. I just want to stress that point. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Well, I think we need to thank the FFC for the presentation. They have flagged some issues which would require our attention as a committee, and also what is coming up from all also the presentation, from the presentation, the issue of share formula, how it arrives, and all of. And also the fairness, but also most importantly from National Treasury, there is also important areas which we need to look at the reports, which are very much critical in our oversight work. So much that at times problems are not more of resources, at times there are problems of inefficiency, systems failure. And even the SALGA raised the issue of that this area is one of the most over-regulated and need to review some legislative framework moving forward. I mean, those are quite critical, important issues that have been raised. And we really need to agree as a committee that we will facilitate this necessary dialogue as this committee, and we'll use the report that we have presented to really serve as a guide. We'll use available information, our research, our own research, of course, based on our interaction with our stakeholders, will serve very useful for us to prominently place these matters on the agenda and influence our work as oversight. Given the issues of share, to the extent that our country is has got huge backlog, or rather we fall within what we classify as developing states, there's huge reason for contest, even contest about how resources are allocated and so forth. That debate will remain very useful, not adversarial, but very important national debate into how we and how best allocation serves the interest of national development. So it's an important aspect, I think, that we'll continue to relate to. So thanks very much. For our stakeholders, for really initiating us. Your reports are useful, and I can undertake as Chair, we are going to be reading this report, and we are going to be extending invitations on much more specific pointed areas that will improve our capacity as well as members of the committee. And so we will have this kind of a relationship. Honorable Chair of Finance, Mr. Shah, has informed me that he has been having a very cordial relationship with the stakeholders. And I should really bank on that. There is at least his constitutional memory. Mr. Kuma, we also have a he carries very useful developments of planning. Now, we will go into the committee. The committee will deal with household matters. Yes, I don't think stakeholders want to. You're not allowing any case to do on our minute adoption. So you are welcome to can set if there's. Then, yeah. Yeah, there are refreshments you can have, and we'll be quick to deal with our own business. Members, I want to draw your attention to the minutes of the previous meeting. the vintage you looked at, and also as the decision of the previous meeting, we said that the consolidated report of the AG on national and provincial audit outcomes will be circulated. It is circulated, isn't it? We have this report. So can I have a confirmation whether the minutes reflect our minutes are captured correctly? Yes, Mr. McCarthy. Okay, honorable member, move.
And I second.
Second that, this is the correct reflection of our previous meeting. Thanks very much, and the meeting is adjourned. Yeah, the meeting is adjourned. Till next time. You're going to have a long day today. This is by the vote.
No, I'm not changing anything.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay.